Okay, should we slowly get started? What? No, it's time to start. So there is a project demo slot sign up sheet that's going around. You can write your name so and take a slot. Basically, that's what you'd use to show your demo your project to the TA next week, Wednesday and Thursday, I believe. So Tuesday is the last class, and Wednesday and Thursday you do this. Okay. Make sure that I get that at the end of the class. Okay, so are there questions on anything, including information integration? None. Okay. So last time I went through this about the variations of information integration. There's just too many different variations, and it's still in a flux. So it's kind of, there are two problems that make it hard for me to teach this well. One is because it's in flux, and two is because I am doing work in the area which makes it harder to take a longer view. Okay, so all the other things that I taught you, I'm not doing research in that area, so it's easier. You know, it's somebody else's stuff, so you can take more general view. For me, some pieces of this are way more important than others, and yet as in terms of providing like a overall view, I have to give you all the pieces. So if you have questions, or if you are losing bearings as to why we are discussing something in today's and next lecture, please stop me and ask me. Okay, that's the way to do it. So as I said, you know, the variations are in terms of what type of information sources exist, when are you doing the integration, before the queries show up or after the queries show up, how general is the solution, and in essence, I mean, this is connected to this, the level of eagerness of integration. In fact, if I were to redo this, and I'm already finding problems with this slide, I would actually just put this here and cut that. That's what I should have done, because ultimately I mean, let me just do that in front of you so that you would not get confused. I would think that that's the only thing that matters. So it doesn't help that I have signed up to do a tutorial on information integration for the second time at a conference. This is not good news, because I still don't actually know what's the best way to present it. So you are the guinea pigs. I've done this once 4 years back, but I don't like it anymore. That's not the way to teach information integration any longer, I think. But there are variations that, you know, so anyway, let me go through this. So you have the types of information sources, the level of eagerness of the integration, when are you doing it, and generality of the solution. Okay, those are the things that we looked at. And I looked at two views of integration from an IR point of view. You are essentially considering just converting the text data into data, structured data, and then supporting joins and so on that. Okay, and the sort of challenges here are things like record linkage. So if there is the same object being mentioned in two different text files under different names, then how do you realize it's the same object? Okay. And then I started talking about this data integration. So the idea there is you are looking at integrating data sources. So all of them are structured data sources. Okay, so that at least cuts down some of the problems, but still leaves a lot more left. Okay. Before going there, let me do something else. Okay. I think this is something you want to keep in mind. Basically, if you're thinking of information integration, you can just do data integration, which is all the sources you're integrating are structured data sources. Okay? Or you can do text integration, where all the sources you are integrating are just pure text sources. Okay? And then you can also combine both. I mean, the general integration, general information integration has both too. Okay? The work that actually has been done that I can talk to you about is focused either on this end or on this end, not too much in the middle. Okay, so that's an open area still. Okay, examples of these different integration scenarios. So you notice here there's a data aggregation, data linking, collection selection names, and those are again appearing here. Each of these are problems on which I can give you like a lecture, 1 hour lecture. Okay, so that means there is something that's been done in that area. Okay, as again, it's just talking at the high level. Okay, so in the case, these two are data integration side. So you are connecting up, you're integrating multiple structured data sources. The aggregation essentially says all the data sources have the same schema. Okay. So in essence, it's like all the data sources are, let's say, citation sources, all the bibliography sources, let's say. Okay, that are, they're all shopping sources. So in fact, an example of data aggregation sites that is very popular is comparison shopping sites. Okay, so where they essentially get the data from multiple sources on the current prices of various items, and then they're giving you one single point of entry where you can search for the best price on something, for example. Okay, that's a data integration, except it's really data aggregation. It's not more than, it's not actually taking information from one source and plugging into another source. It's essentially taking information from multiple sources and, for example, collating them, in essence. Okay, so that for the same exact product, what are the prices in different sites? You know, what is it, how costly is it in Amazon versus some other store versus some other store, okay? Data linking is actually, you're taking information from one source, a tuple from one source, and joining with tuple from another source. Okay, so that's more like the normal join sort of queries, okay? Collection selection, this is the name for scenarios where you are combining pure text sources. Okay, so for example, the example for this is comparison shopping agents. Okay, I gave you some names here. BibFinder is a bibliography aggregation source that actually was done here at ASU. It still works. Then Jungly, I mentioned last time, it's an employment advertisement aggregation system, and so on. And then monster.com, for example, is an example. And comparison shopping sites also fall there. Okay. Collection selection, on the other hand, news.google.com falls here, for example. Okay, because ultimately, this is multiple text databases. So each text database contains multiple text files, and you are taking a single query, single keyword query, and sending it to multiple text databases. Okay, all of them export text documents. In fact, it's an interesting problem that if you were to go into the details of how to support collection selection, it's not that hard for you to understand. Okay, here is an idea that you can probably just consider, which is in collection selection, one of the issues would be, if you have multiple text databases, each of them have files, text files. Okay. Suppose I have a query K1, K2, which is keywords K1, K1 and K2, K2. That's the keyword query I have. Okay. My question is, I mean, of course, you can always send the query to all of the data sources and then take all their results and collate them. One issue would be, if there are many of these, can you pick the top K sources? What would be the first source that you would call with this query? What would be the second source? What would be the third source you would call? Okay. By the way, examples of collection selection, as I said, news.google is an example. Metacrawler, you know, how many of you know this, the dogpile.com or Metacrawler, which are all these meta search engines where one search engine calls multiple other search engines and collates the results and gives you. Okay. In those cases, the only useful, interesting question is, if you're calling everybody and collating, then there's not that much to write about there. Okay. But if on the other hand, I have resource limitations and I'm only allowed to call top K sources, what would be those K sources? Okay. An interesting idea that you can do is the following. Each of these have files, right? And if you actually are directly doing query processing on that one single text source, you would have done probably bag of words, vector space similarity sort of idea, right? Now what you can do is, so here is source S1. So if you have multiple sources like this, one thing you can do is, if you, let's say, have sampled, you know, K files from here, N files from here, N files from here, N files from here, okay? And if you have those samples, then you can consider that sample, union of that sample, as the file representing that source, okay? So the simple idea is the following. Instead of, if you're trying to figure out which is the best source to call to answer this query, since these are all files and the files are being treated as bags of words, why can't I treat the entire source to be a bigger bag of words? So it's like, it's a big plastic bag full of small plastic bags. Now I remove all the small plastic bags, pour all the stuff into the source, that would be like a big plastic bag of words. Okay? And if you think of that, if you have access to the entire bag representation of S1 and the bag representation of S2 and that of S3, then you essentially have three bags and you need to figure out which bag to call first. Okay? And you can use the vector space similarity ideas. So for example, you would consider all the, you know, for each word, you can consider TF, which is the number of times that word appears in that particular collection, and ICF, not IDF, but ICF, which is inverse collection frequency. Okay, so these are all collections. We are basically, each of these sources are called collections. Okay, so you would consider, in essence, what you're trying to find is these keywords. Think of these as three files, and you're trying to figure out which is the file that's most similar to this keyword query. That's what we did as IR problem, right? Okay? So now you would just do the same TF-IDF style vector space similarity. That's one idea, to figure out which source to call first. And having picked that source, then you send the query to the source, and the source does whatever it does. It could be doing retrieval by vector space similarity, or binary search, or whatever, who knows. Okay? Now the only question, of course, is how did I get the big bag of everything that's in S1? I don't. If I have all the things in S1 directly available to me, then I can pour everything into, I can even forget S1, S2, S3, and put a central database of all the files from all the sources. Then I can just call that database, not any of the text sources. So if I, you know, in the context of news.google.com sort of sources, you know, you could just copy over every possible article that is there and every possible newspaper site and put it on a local site for Google and then just do search directly on that. Okay? To the extent, you know, obviously, since you don't have access to everything inside a source, because remember, these sources are autonomous. They're not just going to give you everything that they have. Okay? They'll only have query access. You can only give keywords to them, and they'll give you answers back. So the idea then would be to get a representative. Which is a sample of the collection. So you do probing and get some number of files from each of the collections. You know, n files from this collection, n from this, and n from that. Okay? And just take the union of those n files as the representative for that source, and that source. And do everything as I said before. Okay? Now, it's not a bad way of using something you already know. You know vector space similarity methods, you know TF-IDF, weighting methods, and you're just playing with the same things to get now collection selection, which is which data source, which text collection to call first, which to call next, which to call later. Okay. Now there are, of course, that's just the beginning. I mean, I'm basically saying this so that you'll get some idea as to how would you solve this kind of a problem. Okay. There are more interesting variations on this. In particular, you are essentially going to have to not only get the results from each of the sources, but you have to collate them. Okay? One of the most interesting questions in the text collection scenarios would be, suppose you had a central database. You don't have it, but suppose you had it for a minute, which contains the union of all of these sources. Okay? Suppose you did this keyword query on that database, and you got the top 100 results, or top 10 results. What you would like to get, essentially, is the same top 10 results, even though the files are actually distributed. The ranking shouldn't change. How do you do that? That's a trickier question. Okay, if you just say, get me, you know, a bunch of results, that's one thing, or get me the first source to call, that's a different problem. But a third problem is, after each of these send some results out, how do you re-rank them? How do you re-rank them such that the ranking, that the merging of these results, merged results will be the same ranking as the one that you would have gotten if everything was in single database? Do you understand what I'm saying? Okay. So that's the text collection problem. In fact, there are like tons of papers written on this in the information retrieval community because there, you know, collection selection for information retrieval community is a version of information integration problem. Okay, I'll throw in some slides. I just forgot to put them in, but that would summarize what I just said here. But I think you should have probably been able to understand this. Okay. So that's collection selection. Okay. So let's see. So what I will probably spend more time really is on these two, and especially actually on more of the data aggregation. So I'll talk about data integration scenarios where you are integrating structured data sources. Consider the more fine-grained challenges there. Consider some of the more fine-grained methods for solving them. But in, you know, while those methods, I can ask homework questions on them, you have to understand that what you're doing, you know, let's say in understanding this, is just like one little piece of the information integration puzzle. Okay, I just don't want you to think when we are busily talking about various challenges for data integration that that's the only thing. You know, it's just one aspect of data integration, information integration. Okay? Let's just do a couple of other points, which is So I did not say this specifically. I think I gave you enough examples now saying these are all examples of information integration. I told you the employment advertisements are news.google.com. These are all examples of information integration. But in general, you know, comparison shopping, here's a list, one list. Comparison shopping, portals integrating data from multiple sources, electronic marketplaces where you're taking information from multiple sources. Okay, that's, again, those are examples. So this is in web itself. there is like a whole lot of interest in various scientific communities in having their individually produced data sources combined into a single point of portal. Okay, so there is like a project that's going on at ASU on integrating archaeological sources. Okay, so these are archaeologists who have data sources. They have written down what they dug in various places and they wrote all that stuff down. Now, what they want to have like a single archaeological information integration portal where people can do interesting things, you know, give queries on all of them and so on. Okay, but if you, and then there is one in biology, there is, and you know, in every possible scientific area, they're interested in this sort of thing. Okay, one big commercial interest for information integration in general, and specifically data integration, which is structured data integration, is this. It's a boring part of the databases, but it's the one that pays you salaries, which is every big company has big, multiple databases. They don't have a single database, but multiple databases. And the only way those multiple databases talk normally is people going from one database to another database. They take the results of this database, manually put it into the other database. Okay? And there have been, you heard actually, you know, if you think in terms of Department of Homeland Security, Department of Defense, and all this stuff as different enterprises, you have heard these huge issues in terms of how different agencies don't talk. That's like the human level, but their databases don't talk to each other either. Okay, it may be a good thing because there's privacy issues, okay? But it also might be a bad thing in the sense, currently the only way people can check, you know, certain things is issue multiple queries to different databases and collect the results. You know, almost pick the tuples from here, push it into this, pick the tuples from here, push it into this. Now, this is the sort of stuff that you should be able to automate. Okay, so there's a lot of interest from that side on data integration solutions also. Okay, actually NSF throws in a bunch of money into information and data integration. They pour more money into it than either databases or artificial intelligence, which is kind of depressing. But it's because it's a practical problem, and apparently there was this anecdote that somebody told me that they essentially decided to do this when they found one time that they wanted an answer to a simple question. You know, how much money is being given to historically, I think HBU, which is historically black universities. There are a bunch of you know, education institutions in US which originally started only for African Americans. They may still be that way, but they have, you know, grown larger. But NSF was interested in figuring out the answer to how much research funds have we given to these universities. Okay, it should be easy to answer this question, and it took them a week to figure out the answer, even though they have all the databases, because somebody actually had to do manually plug stuff from one database to another database. Okay, so then that was the way they actually told the Congress that we need more money for this, and they were able to pour it. That's an interesting issue. Okay, so are there any questions on the possible reasons why people might be interested in doing information integration? No. Okay, this I already discussed last time. That's the slide that's there. Without the slide, I discussed this. Comparison shopping agents, of course, are an aspect of information integration. They fall under the data aggregation side. Okay. Now, should comparison shopping agents do warehousing architecture or online mediation architecture? We talked about this last time, right? I mean, so one way of integrating is to pour everything into a central database. Right? So a question, again, I'm sort of going in the wrong, you know, in back and forth, but one issue in terms of integration that you need to answer to yourself is, if you can put everything in one central place, then it becomes simple database query processing, right? So that way you would have reduced a much bigger sounding problem to something that you learned in 412, okay? So you have to ask yourself, before doing anything more, you have to ask yourself, why should I not just do warehousing? Why can't I put everything into a central database?
It won't be up to date.
For example. Okay? So in the case of shopping, essentially, it won't be, it may not be up to date. Now, of course, you could get by with it. You could say, I will refresh the warehouse every day. Then you will at least get, you know, prices that are one day current. Okay. Now, again, why does the Travelocity and all these things, we talked about the fact that they actually do warehousing. Right? I mean, they don't actually do calling up the individual airlines. How do they get away with it? Because everybody is forced to write their price structure into one single database. So it's like you don't have to make, I mean, the warehouse is already put in place. Okay, so everybody is writing. If they are changing prices, they make sure that it's reflected there. So you, the mediator, doesn't have to worry about it. Okay. Okay, one other issue is in terms of just the data integration point of view, is if all we are talking about data integration is taking multiple data sources and providing a single point of, let's see, what did I, okay, where did I go? Okay. What I want to do is provide a single mediator over multiple data sources, doesn't that look like distributed databases, for example? How many of you know distributed databases? Some of these things make only sense if, you know, you already know that. But so there is this whole area called distributed databases. Okay. Now, one question, of course, is why isn't data integration the same as either just the simple databases? It can become simple databases if you put everything into a central database. Or why is it not distributed databases? Distributed databases actually is an area where you know that the data is distributed over multiple sources. Yes?
In terms of distributed database,
that's one idea, but that's not the only thing. It's definitely good. In fact, it's not necessary that they have the same schema. The bigger issue in this... That's true, but you could do that too. In the data integration, you will wind up having to map it. Somebody had an answer, I thought.
We know the schema,
but more importantly than that, you know, this picture I was showing you last class. Administrative proximity. How much control do you have on the data sources? In the case of distributed databases, you have complete control over where you put what. It's like instead of me having one house, I have two houses. But I know what's in both those houses. Okay. As against, I'm trying to figure out what's in everybody's house, on which I don't have control. They can put stuff, they can remove stuff. Okay. So in the biggest issue that differentiates distributed databases data integration systems is administrative proximity. You don't have control over the data sources. Okay, that's the thing that actually multiple pieces that sort of gets exhibited in multiple ways. First of all, there is no common schema. Different sources have different schemas, so you have to sit down and write a mapping between the sources. There may be legacy sources which are not even databases. They just are text files, but then they put up an XML front. Remember the way we talked about XML, you know, how databases can put an XML front. Okay. They are autonomous oftentimes, you know, multiple sources on which you have no control. And so you don't know, for example, one of the biggest issues in distributed databases is you know exactly, you sometimes replicate the data. You would put multiple copies of the same table in multiple places. And you know exactly how many copies are there and where you put them. That is different from five different people making up movie sources on the web. And they just start putting information about the movies that they like. And some, there may be overlaps, there may be disjointness, nothing is controlled. Okay, it's the autonomy that kills you in the context of brain integration. Okay, and then of course, some of these are the query processing issues, which is, for example, you know, if to the extent all these sources are on the internet and the only way you are connecting to them is through the web-based interfaces and so on, you essentially have all sorts, and then these sources, these autonomous sources, if you are integrating over a bunch of autonomous sources, they don't even know that you are integrating over them. Okay, it's like you have set up a shop saying, I will be providing. So this actually happens to many of these meta search engines. They would say, we will be giving you, you know, information from multiple search engines. And every once in a while, one of those other search engines wakes up and says, hey, why should we allow you to take our data and give it to somebody else? You know, we are losing advertisement revenue. So they will say, you know, block the guy, you know, block the calls from the meta crawler, the meta search engine. Okay? So that's very much possible. And so, in fact, you don't have guaranteed access to the data sources. You don't have guarantees on how much time it will take for a query to run. So there's a lot of query time uncertainty that makes query processing itself interesting. Okay, which is not something that we talked about much in this course, optimizing queries and executing them. But database people are very interested in that stuff normally. And they change. There are different characteristics of query processing, which we might talk about next class. Okay. Anyway, so, and then, you know, this picture is worth keeping in mind from the point of view of data integration. What are the different related ideas? So, you know, you have complete administrative, it's very close to you, and it's completely, the schemas are completely aligned. That would be your traditional databases. And then the other end is sources which are far away, and you have no schema alignment at all. That would be just normal web search. And then it's interesting to see there are other pieces, okay, data integration, desktop search. So, for example, searching over a desktop is right in front of you. But there is really no schema that you have agreed in which the data is being stored. So in some sense, you will wind up supporting sort of IR, quasi-IR style search. Okay. Okay. So let me go through, as I said, I will go through some details for the data integration. So I went through some details for collection selection, which is one problem. At the risk of boring you to death, I'll show you this picture and say I sort of did one piece here. Okay, and I will do this now mostly for the until I tell you I've changed my track. Okay. Okay, so we are doing data integration. The only things that we are integrating are structured sources. So what are the possible solutions that are present? Okay. Of course, you can do most. You know, you can actually do an ad hoc, I mean, you can do a mashup kind of a solution where you provide a program that sort of takes information from this data source, puts it into that data source, and gives you answer. Okay? We would give up, that can always be done, and that's good for things like a single very useful query, okay, that everybody wants to ask, such as, where is my flight? That, you know, you can do a mashup and be done with it. But if you're trying to support multiple types of queries, then you would need multiple mashups, which is just painful. Okay? So then the more interesting answers are, of course, data warehousing. Again, this is kind of a repetition of some of the stuff I said, but probably with more detail for data integration alone. So data warehousing, load all the data periodically into a warehouse, okay, and then just directly support query processing on that warehouse. So the users don't need to know that they haven't looked at all basically they're getting answers as if they called all the sources and collated the results. But what happened was somebody already called the sources, crawled the sources, put all the data in one single place. Okay? Performance is good, data may not be fresh, and in fact you may not even be allowed to crawl. In fact, one of the tricky issues is, how do you how do you actually construct a warehouse when the only way of when the data sources, when the data sources don't want to be crawled, they only want to support query access. Okay, so if they don't cooperate with you, then you cannot really get all the data out of a database. You know, it's not a one of the interesting things is for a normal database on which you have complete control, you can do selection star queries. So give me all the tuples in a certain table. I can ask that question. Okay. Amazon, in essence, is providing a view into its database. But it has very strong restrictions on the kinds of queries you can ask. You cannot, for example, ask the following query. Give me all the books which have less than 357 pages. It's a query you can ask. If you are Jeff Bezos, you can ask that query. Because they have that information. They know for each book how many pages are there. And it's just a selection predicate on the number of pages. Why aren't you being given that? Because your view into their database has restrictions. Okay? You would not be able to ask questions by selecting over number of pages or selecting over certain other things. You know, you are only going to be allowed to ask queries by selecting over the title or the author, that sort of thing. Okay? So it's like that again brings up this whole issue of autonomous data sources which don't really want to give you all the information. They put up their data to do their own thing. Okay? So how would you construct a complete data warehouse in those kinds of scenarios? If the data sources want to cooperate with you, it's one thing. Then they will provide like an RSS feed or something and then you can push it into a single warehouse. But it will be very unlikely that they would want to do that in general. Okay? But there are cases where they do it though. For example, in fact, one of the things that Amazon's marketplace sort of ideas do is, you know, these guys essentially have, you know Amazon's marketplace, right? So individual, apart from Amazon selling its own things, it also sells other people's things on its website. Now, in essence, what they're doing is they are giving control over that part to the seller, who then essentially makes sure that the data is fresh. If they change something in their own database, they also make sure that it changes in Amazon's version of their database. So somebody else is cooperating completely. They do it basically because they think they can sell more things by putting it up on Amazon. Okay. Otherwise, you couldn't just have access to somebody else's data because it's like question of proprietary ownership of the data. Okay. So data warehousing doesn't always work. Okay. But when it works, you know, it's a nice idea, and then it removes a need for having a whole entire discussion on data integration because it's just now reduced to something that you already know. Okay, questions? Okay. Now this business about cleaning and scrubbing and data, basically all of these data sources have different schemas. What you do is you have decided what the schema is for your data warehouse, and when you are putting the tuple from here into this, you are essentially aligning the fields right. Okay, as you are looking at all these sources from the point of view of your own exported schema. Okay, that's one idea. Okay, now notice of course that ultimately you have to keep in mind that irrespective of which approach you use, you are allowing user to provide queries to one single portal, which then answers those queries. So the user doesn't need to know about the schemas of these sources. In the warehouse, they just need to know the schemas of these that source. They have to ask questions on that. Okay. The other one, what I called online integration earlier, is more like this, where essentially the user asks a query. It's not a warehouse, so the data still lives in the sources. Okay, this is the mediator. This is the portal at which the user is putting the queries. The individual users are putting the queries. Now this mediator is like the middleman or middle woman. Okay, it truly is doesn't have the data, but would get the data on demand based on the queries. Okay, so what it does then is it takes the query and then it sends the query to the sources in the right order, and does whatever it needs to be doing in terms of either collating them or joining the tuple from one source to other source and answering the query. Okay, now the interesting questions here, of course, are there is a schema for the mediator. There was a schema for this. Here is this is the mediator in the data warehouse. There was a schema for it too. Okay, and during the quote unquote cleaning and scrubbing phase, when you populated your warehouse, you had to make sure that the tuples from here, when they are put in the warehouse, they are put in the right table. Okay, which field here goes to which field here. Suppose, for example, it's a bunch of book sources, booksellers, and this source calls writer. It calls authors writer. So there is a writer field, and then you have only an author field. So during the time when you are taking a tuple from here and putting it here, you say, "Oh, writer is the same as author." It's sort of a programmatic. You did a program which essentially makes sure that all the stuff in writer goes to the author field. Okay. Now here it needs to be done much more, transparently, more directly, because after the query comes, the query would be on this schema. At that time, the query has to be converted into queries on these other sources. To be able to do that, you need to have the relation between the schema of the mediator and the schema of the data sources. Okay, this is the mapping problem. Now, before we talked a lot about who does the mapping, but suppose I'm willing to do the mapping. Suppose I am going to sit down, it's my little mediator. Okay, previously I was doing it in a programmatic form. Here I'm going to actually tell my mediator schema, and I'll also say which part of my mediator schema is connected to which part of these guys' schema. I'm going to say that. Even if I have decided and I'm going to do this, it turns out there are multiple ways I can do it. Okay, in fact, we'll look at the issue of how to connect mediator schema to data sources schemas. And that turns out there are like two ideas we'll come back to, called global as view and local as view. In essence, and I'll come back to that in a minute, in essence, you could either say that my mediator schema here is a tight union of the schemas of these guys. That's one idea. And I'll put it in more formal terms in a while. Okay? So either I can say that what I am trying to send is a tight union of what all these guys are trying to send. So I'm no more than my students or my, I'm sorry, I'm probably let it slip, but to the extent you think of a advisor as a mediator and who takes grants and makes the students work on the various problems, this global as view is I'm no more than my students. So exactly what I can do is what my students can do. Okay, that's one way of looking at it. Okay, the other is I will promise much more than my students can deliver. Okay, I'll get the grant and then essentially figure out, and then each student then is recorded in my database in terms of, with respect to all the things I'm promising, this is the part this guy can deliver, this is the part this guy can deliver. In one case, you wind up writing the data sources as views on the mediator schema. In the other case, mediator schema is written as a view on the data source schema. We'll talk about that in a minute. But it's interesting to note that now, in terms of, you have to get sick of this picture, but in terms of this picture, the question that I just talked about is really low-level detail. But that's where you can start actually writing papers and proving theorems. It's a good place to, because by that time, enough things have been fixed that you can actually talk about what are the advantages of doing schema mapping in, you know, in one way versus another way. Okay. So it's on this side, and I'm talking, and I'm also agreeing that I am the mediator designer is willing to do the mapping. The only question they have is which is the best way they should establish the mapping. Okay. So as I said, so the issues in doing these kinds of virtual architectures are relating the sources to the mediator, which is exactly what I was talking about right now. Okay. And then reformulating the query. Once I decided how this schema is connected to these schemas, then once a query comes to me, I essentially need to reformulate into queries for the various sources. Okay. And after the reformulation is done, I get the tuples, I may have to post-process them and send the results out. Okay? And then, of course, doing this whole thing efficiently. Now, just to try and stretch your minds, look at these issues in the context of that picture. I know that that's not data integration, that's collection selection, which is sort of text integration. Are there versions of these problems in doing this? Just a sanity check, because otherwise I'm just, you know, making up different theories in different parts of the big picture, which is possible, but, you know, it's worth asking yourself, is there some common questions that are coming across the board? So for example, is this important? Relating sources and the mediator, is that important? And why, if you know, in text collection, is that important or not? No. Why not? Yeah, because nobody has schema. So we are all schema-less text files. So there is no question of actually connecting my schema to your schema. None of us have schema. Okay. Is this important? Reformulating the query. Not really, not more than in a trivial sense, because every keyword query I get, I'll send it to here, here, as well as here. So there is a reformulation, which is, it's like a fork. They take the query, make multiple copies, send it to multiple sources. But there's no theory there. There's nothing particularly hard there. Okay? Is this important, efficient planning and execution?
Because like, there might be time lag between the time delay between the queries.
Yeah, so no. So in fact, in general, the only thing we talked about there is what is the order in which to call the sources, for example, right? And that's about efficiency. Because in fact, in any information integration scenario, in any integration scenario, if resources is not an issue, if you have all the time in the world and you have all the access in the world, then you can always answer queries by calling everybody. Okay, I think I told you this in the beginning of the semester once. So that is the dumb idea. I mean, you have to think of that idea as the equivalent of, you can always sort by generating all permutations and checking if any of them are sorted list. No, it is possible, you can do it, but it is a dumb idea. Okay, because that's n factorial, and you can do sorting much better than n factorial. Okay, so yes, you can always get rid of the efficiency of execution by saying, hey guys, I have a query. Everybody wake up and help me solve it. And you can do it like a day, no, maybe once, and then after that everybody ignores you. Okay, so you do need to make sure that you spend time figuring out which sources to call. Okay, and what's the order to call them in, for example. Okay, now in the context of collection selection, I said the only thing that matters in terms of efficiency is, for example, the order in which the data source, the collection source, collections are called. Okay. Other things can matter in the context of data sources. For example, it may be that the user is asking a query. Here is an interesting thing. Think about this. User is asking a query on the mediator schema, which selects over number of pages, because I just said that already. Number of pages in a book. Give me all the books which have between 357 to 367 pages. Okay? here is data source for Amazon, here is maybe university bookstore data source, here is some other data source. Okay. For the Amazon source, how would you answer that query? You can say, I don't know, I'll give up. But giving up can be done like before you start. But in fact, you can answer this query, right? Yeah, exactly, for example. Or, you know, just basically make up, essentially make up queries for Amazon. Okay, so this guy only wants books which have between 357 and 367 pages. They don't care about who wrote them, what are the titles, etc., etc. But this guy would not answer queries unless you tell them what are the author's names or what is the title. Exactly. This is what you would do. You know, if you are a human in the loop, you would say, yeah, you know, I know that you have your restrictions. I'll find a way to get around them. I will generate whole number of queries. Okay, send them to you. You will send me the answers. Okay, and then if those books do have, when the book is sent, here is the interesting part. When the book is sent, Amazon does tell you how many pages are there. It just does not let you get the books out based on the number of pages. But when the book is sent, it tells you how many pages are there. So when the book comes back, you see how many book pages are there, and if it is between 357 and 367, one answer has already been made. Now, how do you get more? Well, when they send the book, in the case of Amazon, for example, it might say other books written by the same author. Okay? So you click on those. So you basically take those pieces and send them back to the Amazon database. Okay? This is a recursive query. In fact, we will talk about much less glamorous versions of this. But I think this is the best glamorous version I found. You know, I never thought about it before. But you know, if you are interested in finding out, you know, how many books between 357 and 367 pages are there, you can get a pretty good. You can, instead of giving up, you can at least get some number of answers this way. Okay, so it's like a recursive query plan where you would generate a seed set of author names, etc. You feed them in. And when the tuples come back, you take more words that are appearing in there, feed them back. You're generating, you know, virtual queries just so that I'll make you talk. And when you talk, I'll know the answer. You know, keep making them talk. That's the basic idea. But interesting point. This is something that you never had to do for. It's not because of data integration that this is happening. It's happening because this data source is autonomous and it's not going to give you all the data in it. It'll only support certain types of queries. Okay? And this ultimately becomes an issue of efficient planning and execution. You know, when you're only allowing certain types of queries, how do I answer? You know, how do I get as many answers as I can, as fast as I can? Okay? Talking about relating the mediator schema and the data source schema. Okay, here is the issue is, as I said, you could either say, I mean, I already gave you two examples of doing it. One is make this schema be a tight integration of these schemas, tight union of these schemas, or make this be much, so make the mediator schema promise much more. But then everybody registers, every source registers saying, I can provide this part of the schema, I can provide this part of the schema. One is local as you, one is global as you. Okay, but before we get into those details, I will get into those details in a minute, let's actually ask ourselves, what's the big deal in relating mediator schema to data source schemas? What are the issues, what are the guarantees I want to provide? Why can't I just come up with something? Okay. One issue, here is an interesting thing. I mean, so it's like we're taking a step back and saying, before asking what are examples of doing this, we're asking, without even knowing the solution, what should the solution guarantee? What are a good solution versus bad solution for relating mediator schemas to the source schemas? Right? You always set your performance goals before you make the solution, because otherwise the solution you got automatically is what you were looking for. You know, that's not good. Okay, so the one of the ideas is expressive power. The connection, whatever it is, the mapping that you establish between mediator schema and the source schemas, it should be able to distinguish between sources with closely related data so that it can prune access to irrelevant sources. Okay, saying, for example, this is a book source, this is a book source, this is a book source, is not as good as saying this is a book source which specializes in Western. This is a book source that specializes in science fiction books. And saying that this is a book source that specializes in science fiction books is not as good as saying this is a book source that specializes in science fiction books but really, really, really hates Arthur Clarke. Okay, so those queries don't ask this guy. The more of this information you put in, the more efficient your query processing can be. Okay, if you say they're all book sources, then everybody would be called for every query, for example. Okay, so this is one issue, expressive power. The other is easy addition. If you are developing a mediator, the question is, the question is, how are you going to advertise your mediator? You would like to advertise your mediator in such a way that if you find new sources that can be added, they can be added easily. Okay, think of my example of advisor and student, right? So suppose I undersold myself, and not undersold, I mean, I made my description to funding agencies as the tight union of my students' competences, right? If one student leaves, another student comes, and they have better competences, that's not being reflected in my advertisement. So they would never call me for doing certain types of work. Okay? So what it makes sense to decide what it is that I want to provide, I the mediator wants to provide, and let every new source that is brought into the mediator register itself onto that schema. Okay? And in particular, if I advertise myself as the tight union of my students' competences, every time a student graduates or a new student comes in, I have to send mails to every funding agency saying, by the way, I can no longer do joins because the join guy has left, but now I can do IR stuff because the IR guy just joined. Okay, it's a painful thing, right? I'm changing my schema, mediator schema is being redesigned every time a source is being added. Whereas if I just decided, okay, I'm going to do this stuff and then tell everybody, and then as new students come, you know, and that's not a tight union of the students, then when the students come, they can just say, well, this is the part of what your advertisement is that we are interested in doing. Okay, so that makes it easier to add sources. Sources being students in my example, but data sources in general. Okay, that's important. You want to be able to add sources easily. Reformulation. You want to be able to take the user query and convert it into queries on the source at the data sources efficiently. Okay, there are bad ways of doing it, there are good ways of doing it. In the example that I talked about earlier with the Amazon, suppose actually Amazon does allow direct querying on the number of pages in the book. It's not in the front page, maybe you have to do advanced query options and you have to put that thing in. Imagine how silly you would feel if you did the version that I told you, which is generate all sorts of books and check whether they have 357 to 367 pages. It's a very dumb, it will give you answers, but it's a very costly way of answering, given that in fact you have a much better way of reformulating the same query. Okay, so you want to be able to do efficient reformulation. And then this is very, very important, non-lossy. Non-lossy basically means that if I am the middleman, why don't people like middlemen or middlewomen? They always say cut the middleman, right? I mean, nobody ever says have a middleman, you know. Middlemen are always making lots and lots of money, that's why we want to cut the middleman. But why do we want to cut the middleman? because we think that somehow going to the source we can get a lot more directly. Okay, so in general, middlemen lead to loss of information. Okay, and when you are doing mediation, one question is this question, the query that the user is giving you here, if they gave it to these guys directly, could they have gotten more information? If so, then the mediator is lossy. Right? And if it's a lossy mediator, sooner or later, you know, if there is enough economic incentive, people will start getting out of the mediator. How many of you use Expedia to find out the airplane prices and then go to the flight source so that you can get what? Frequent flyer miles or $5 less? Right? Okay. And so now Amazon, no, Expedia is now doing frequent flyer miles. You know, I guess you get to go to Microsoft every once in a while. But the interesting point is there are, you know, that's of course there is an economic issue there too, but ultimately you can think of that as a lossy mediation too at some level. You know, my important issue is if the query when the query is put on these sources directly, if I would have gotten, let's say, tuple T1, and that is not coming out when I let the query go through the mediator, then T1 is lost. T1 is an answer, it's not coming out, so it's a lossy mediation. Okay, so these are issues that you would be interested in looking at when you are connecting mediator schema to source schema. I'm skipping over a bunch of them, but that's okay. Okay, so this is what I believe. So I mentioned these names already. Let me give you examples. So that's what we'll do today by the end of the class. So as I said, you could do two examples, two ways of doing it at least. You know, there are multiple other ways you could come up with. Two ways of doing it is global as you, which is me defining myself as a tight union of my students' capabilities, or local as you, where I define myself independently, okay, and then each of my students then records themselves in terms of my capabilities. So this part we can do, this part we can do. Okay. So global as view express the mediated schema relations as a set of views over the data source relations. Local as view expresses the source relations as views over mediated schema. Okay. How many of you know views in databases? Everybody? Okay. In case you don't, here is an example. A view is a query on a database. A view is a query on a database. Okay, it's like a macro query. So if you give a name to, let's say, here is a query, in the SQL, right? Create view Seattle view as select buyer, seller, product, store from the tables person and purchase such that the city of the person is Seattle and the name of the person is the same as the buyer. Okay, now that's just. Now, once I define this, I can then write new queries which act as if Seattle view is a table. Is a table. Now, here's an interesting question. This is a table, right? But these are tables too: product, seller, buyer, etc. They're also tables. Person and purchase are tables, right? One of these is like a table that has been defined in terms of other tables through this query. The question that one can ask is this new table, Seattle View, is it physically present somewhere or is it a virtual table? Do you understand what I'm saying? Okay. As far as the semantics of this new query is concerned, this new query actually uses product table and Seattle view table. Now it may well be that the product table is actually physically stored somewhere and the Seattle table may either be physically stored somewhere, in which case you just go directly there, or it's just a front, it's a view name, and so what you would do is wherever Seattle view occurs, you put this entire query. It's a macro expansion, The first one is, the second one is called virtual view. That means the view is just a query that is, you know, executed on demand at the time you want. Okay. The first one is called what? Who are the database people here? If you have already computed this table and stored it somewhere, what is it called? Materialized view. It's called materialized view. Keep that in mind, because you know we already know views, and you also now know that views can be either virtual or materialized. Okay, keep that in mind. Now, global as view as well as local as view essentially are being defined in terms of views over schemas. Okay, this one is a schema. Mediator schema is a view on the data source schemas, data source relations, and opposite in the next one. Okay. Okay, enough setup. Here are some examples. Okay, I have a bunch of movie databases right now. I have two movie relations, movie title, director, year, genre, schedule, cinema, title, time. Those are the two tables I have. Okay, and I have, this is my mediator schema. I have decided my mediator schema. Okay, and these are the sources that I have. Okay, in English, source S1 provides title, director, year, genre, tuples. Source S2 provides title, director, year, genre. Source S3 and S4 actually provide pieces. Okay, S3 provides title and director, S4 provides title, year, genre. Two different tables. All of them are sources. Okay, so clearly these are all the data sources that the mediator has access to. And so it wants to be able to convert queries into queries on those sources. Now, one way, as I said, is global as view, where you want to wind up defining these tables, movie and schedule, as views over these tables. What are the tables? S1, S2, S3, S4. Those are the tables. So if I define movie in terms of S1, S2, S3, S4, and if I define schedule in terms of S1, S2, S3, S4, that's global as view. Because that's advisor defining tightly, themselves tightly in terms of the students. Okay? Here, I am done that. Movie is selecting tuples from S1, union selecting tuples from S2, union selecting S3 title, S3 director, S4 year, S4 genre from S3, S4 where S3 title equal to S4 title. What is that? That's a joint query. So there's a view. Now I have currently defined the movie table as a view on the source table. Agreed? Is this a virtual view or a materialized view? What? Virtual view. Because essentially what happens is, if you wind up using movie in your query, so remember that the user comes and sees only two tables, movie and schedule, and they will write SQL queries over movie and schedule. Okay? Then they get automatically expanded into, movie gets expanded into this, schedule gets expanded into something similar, and they just get executed. Now, whatever I just said also told you whether or not, I'm sorry, I showed virtual view, so it's obviously you're all very smart. You're not reading the title schedule. But what is interesting here, let me see what was interesting, what they want to say. Okay, so you have a, remember I said that if there's a query on movie, it can be easily expanded into query on the sources. What is reformulation? Reformulation is query on the movie and schedule being converted to queries on S1, S2, S3, S4. How hard is it? Not hard at all. It's just macro expansion. So in global as view, one of the advantages is query reformulation is a no-brainer, right? You know, again, I don't know why I came up with this infelicitous idea, the scenario of advisor and the student, but if I advertise myself exactly as the union of what my students can do, then when the grant guy says, do this research, it's a no-brainer as to which student is supposed to deliver on this, which students are supposed to deliver on this. Because, I have said already, right? So reformulation is easy in Global Azure. What is hard, of course, is if I add an extra source now, what happens? I need to change this view. The mapping has to be entirely changed whenever you add an extra source. Okay? What about local Azure? The same exact example, okay? And I'll assume this is also the same schema. And now I am going to express the source relations as views on the mediated schema relations. The opposite, okay? So what do? Here, create source S1 as select tuples from the movie table. Create source S3 as select title and director. Oh, actually, I have a different set of sources, by the way, in this case. So S1 is title, director, year, genre. S3 is title, director alone. S5 is title, director, year. But only for year greater than 1960. Okay? So anyway, so this corresponds to this guy registers himself as this view on this virtual schema. Mediator schema is virtual, it doesn't exist. But people with data are registering as views on virtual relation. What views? Virtual views or materialized views? Materialized view. Again, think of students and advisors. So each student who actually knows how to do a certain type of research is now being forced to register themselves in terms of the capabilities that their advisor has advertised to the world without actually knowing himself or herself how to do this stuff. Okay, so they are basically saying, oh, you said you will do IR, I will provide the IR stuff. I know how to do IR. So it's materialized. Okay? Source S3 as title and director from the movie. Source S5 as title, director, year from movie where year is greater than 1960 and genre is comedy. The beauty of this direction is you could be essentially, you're saying the mediator schema now can have as many tables as you want. And it could take the stance that I know all the movies in the world. I know all the schedules of all the movies in the world. However, when you actually ask me the query, I hope that there is somebody to back me up. Okay, so in fact, for example, if this is the only source I had and none of these sources existed, if only this source existed, given this, people will be asking me about movies, let's say made in the silent movie era, and I'll say, oh, no movies were made in the silent movie era. Why? Because the only outsourcing guy that I have access to, only knows movies after 1960. So with straight face, I say, yeah, no movies are made, during silent movie era. Okay, that's the kind of interesting thing that happens when you do. So it's again a small piece in the bigger picture, but you can actually talk about, more details when you focus on that one piece. Okay, so sources are materialized views of mediator schema. Let me show you an example here, which sort of brings, so the other thing, actually let me make that, and then, the other thing is because of the way each source is registering itself, if I have a new source, all I need to do is write a mapping from that source onto the schema, that's all. I don't have to redo other people's mappings. When a new student comes, the other students, their mapping still remain as they were before. Okay? Yes? No, these are materialized. No, this view is a materialized view over this. So one way of thinking about virtual schema is think of the big database in the sky. Okay, think about it this way. This is actually a very useful thing to do. There was, in the beginning, there was a big database in the sky, okay, which had all the movie information and all the schedule information. While that database existed, these guys went and found them, defined themselves that this way, and copied over those movies, kept with themselves. Now the database disappeared. Only the schema exists. The database disappeared. The database in the sky disappeared. The only thing you have left now are the pieces that people have copied over. It's like Fahrenheit 411, right? And now you're trying to reconstruct the reality of the big database given the copies that were made at the time when it existed. Okay, right now it's virtual, but you know, conceptually it makes sense to say these guys just copied over the movies they were, when they were available. Okay. Now here is an interesting, I mean, so obviously adding sources is easy in local as you, adding sources is harder in global as you. And in fact, one other thing that I didn't make it as clear is it turns out actually that doing reformulation is harder in local as you. Not just harder, it's NP complete in local as you. Okay? Whereas it was just a simple macro expansion in global as you. Think about this and ask me if you did not figure out why this is the case. That's what I'm talking about next. But let me end with this, which is, here is an example where I have one source, S4, which just sends cinema and genre. Okay? And the mediator schema is movie and schedule still. If you are trying to use global as you, the only thing you can do is to define movie as null, null, null genre and schedule as cinema, null, null. Okay? Whereas if you're doing local as view, you can define S4 as essentially a direct join over the movie and schedule. This should be obvious once you think about this. Now the question is, this is lossy mediation. Because if I did want to find out, you know, what cinema hall runs what type of movies, I could answer that question if I went here. I could not answer this question with this mapping. I could still answer that question with this mapping. I'll end here. You can think about this next class and come back. So some small things can actually make big differences. So here is, local as view is non-lossy compared to global as view.